Hello and welcome to this episode of the ESG Fitness Podcast. I think I said that at double speed, so if you're someone who listens to this at double speed, it's going to be like four times speed. Whew, you're welcome. This episode is going to be all about mindset, aging, fear of aging, the impact of exercise on aging, and menopause. And you might be thinking, well, I'm only 22. Great, good for you. But we are all going to age, so this is relevant no matter what age you are. And if you've ever told yourself that you're too old to do X, or that it's all downhill from here, or, oh, those were the good old days, this episode is for you. So listen in. This was triggered by a question I got from a client, which was along the lines of, how do I handle this kind of stuck mentality and this fear of aging that I have around perimenopause, and I feel a little bit like a lost cause, which I think is very relatable. And then it kind of spiraled into a huge life mindset and aging brain dump. So this is quite a long solo episode, or I think it will be, because I'll probably go on some tangents as well, aside from the few bullet points that I've made. Anyway, the fear of aging is not silly or anything to be embarrassed about. And I think anyone, I was going to say over the age of 25, but I actually think everyone feels it to an extent. Not children, obviously. But the only way that you're going to avoid aging is dying. So you may as well embrace it, or at least accept it, because there's no point worrying about what will inevitably happen. And something I heard Ryan Holiday say on a podcast this week was in relation to acceptance, and it really, really hit me. And it was like, I will definitely misquote this, but it was something along the lines of, like, a lot of people struggle with acceptance. And when you think about it, it's bizarre, because whether you choose to accept something or not, it's happening. Like, whether you choose to accept that you're going to age or not, you're still going to age. It's not going to change the fact. You're simply creating more pain for yourself if you don't accept it. And it wasn't in the context of aging, but it fits quite well there. Something else that I journaled on a little bit this week is a quote that I heard, and I just thought, wow, that is actually really deep. And sometimes I read a quote and it's such an obvious thing, and I don't know if it just hits different at different times or depending on what you're going through or where your headspace is. But anyway, this quote is, on the other side of every fear is freedom. Like, think about that for a second. I think that's quite profound. It's probably, everyone's like, it's really obvious, Emma, but okay, moving on. The reason that like hit home a little bit is because fear is almost always, when you get to like the crux of it, perceived lack of control in some way. And taking action is your first step to facing your fears, and then obviously, because of the quote, gaining freedom. So this lends to, if you have a fear of aging, what can you do about aging? Are you doing all that you can do to age well? And by far the biggest factor here is staying active. And by the end of this episode, you will be massively convinced of that. But first of all, because surprisingly enough, I already went on a bit of a tangent, not where I wanted to go, but I want to set the scene. So one fear that a lot of women have is that they have quote-unquote peaked. And I want to squash this. By the way, is that the saying, squash this? Or is it something else? Anyway, I want to dismiss this. And also the concept that your 20s or your 30s or whatever years, like your teen years, whatever, they were the best years of your life. One, I just don't think that that's true at all. And two, what good does it do thinking like that? Like, none. Absolutely none. So really stupid thought process. And something that I think is important to essentially just enjoy life in general, and something that I think I've noticed more in the last maybe 2 years is the joy of being present. Because these are, like, cringe as it is, these are the good old days. But the only way that you can actually enjoy them and actually feel like they are is to be present. And this doesn't just happen. Like, I think some people are maybe better at being in the moment and being carefree than others. But you know what? For most people, it doesn't just happen. Like, it's not a natural thing for me. In fact, it's quite unnatural for me. So it takes conscious effort to put your phone down, to call yourself out on worrying about what you have to do tomorrow or what other people are doing, and just enjoy today and be truly present and in the moment. Something that really helps that is practicing gratitude every single day. Write it down, because that makes it real. I started doing this and I said I would only do it for a few months. That was probably a bit of a trick, because I was like, this is quite tedious. Like, do I want to do this for the rest of my life? Probably not, but I'll do it for a while. And I knew that you'd have to do it for at least a couple of months to actually kind of start to feel the benefits. And I was like, I'll do it for a few months while I need to do it. And if I'm honest, I feel like I could probably stop now. And the reason I say that is because it happens naturally. Once you force it for a while, it happens naturally. So you don't have to be like, what am I really grateful for today? And like, you're forcing yourself to find things that you enjoyed in the day or things that you're truly grateful for. But once you start practicing that, your mind does that on its own and you just become someone who is grateful, which is really nice, actually. But anyway, I still do it because I get so much from it. And I think I am better at naturally noticing these things, but writing them down helps as well. So if you can do this, and if you can start truly being present, I believe you will start to love your life and what you have now, rather than resent the aspects that you potentially miss, because it's very easy to focus on what you don't have as opposed to what you do have. And happier people focus on what they do have, not what they don't have. Like, it seems really simple, but that is the secret. Happier people focus on what they do have, not what they don't have. And it took me a long time to realize this very simple concept and embrace it, but gratitude will literally change your life in that aspect. You will become a happier person, and it will take time. And I think you probably only notice almost in hindsight once you've been living that way for a while. And a good example of this, is this a good example? Yeah, I think so. A good example of this is the concept of the arrival fallacy. So this is the concept that once you arrive at something, or once you achieve something, or once you get like X, Y, or Z, like, you're telling yourself you'll be happy then. Like, once you graduate, then you'll be happy. Once you get a raise? Once you get a promotion, then you'll be happy. Once you reach X scale weight or fit into X dress, that will suddenly make you so much happier and completely change your life. And the problem with this is, it is not true. In fact, often the anticipation of an event or something that you're looking forward to, I'm doing a podcast at a slightly different time of day and I don't think I'm in the zone. Strange noises keep coming out of my mouth and I'm like, I don't mean to make that noise. Anyway, often the anticipation of an event brings as much, if not more, joy than the event itself. And prime examples of this might be like the lead up to Christmas, or imagining how you'll feel when you finally go on holiday that you've been waiting for all year, or in this instance, potentially like 3 years. And this has been shown, like, this concept has been shown numerous times in psychology research. So rather than feeling happy after we achieve X, we often actually feel a little bit low, as it wasn't exactly how we expected, or it wasn't perfect, or it was a bit of an anticlimax and we ended up not feeling the way that we were expecting to feel. And part of this is probably because as humans, we tend to be very good at finding negatives without really trying. So it's a little bit harder, as I've just been saying, to reprogram your brain to look for positives as opposed to look for negatives. But if you're, I don't know, if you've been waiting for your holiday for years And then the plan had to change a little bit. Your bags were delayed. Like, you were next to a screaming baby on the plane. Like, you lost your luggage. Like, little things that you focus on went wrong. Then it can feel like it's less enjoyable than what you were expecting. And I think a lot of the arrival fallacy or subsequent, like, success hangover, which it's often called, like, can be mitigated by practicing gratitude and by being present and by probably having a bit of perspective. And being truly present, like really present, means not worrying about what is to come or what has been, but just enjoying the moment. This is a bit of a tangent, but I think it's really, really important. And I think a lot of people who fear aging or have this story that they tell themselves that they've peaked, I think a lot of that can be reduced by being present and enjoying what you have now rather than always comparing yourself to what you had. And we are aware that comparison can be bad, but we often think of that in the context of comparing yourself to others. So like on social media, oh, don't compare yourself to someone else. You don't know, it's just a highlight reel, blah, blah, blah. True. But also we compare ourselves to our previous selves, and that can be really damaging as well. So as an example, on a personal level, I try not to compete with my previous self. Well, yeah, kind of. I try not to compare what I do now to what I could do pre-back injury. It's not helpful. And when you look a little bit broader in the context of my whole life, like, I may be weaker physically and extremely less physically able, but mentally I'm much stronger, I'm much wiser, and I have done so many things that I am proud of, with so much more to come that I'm very excited about. So I choose not to focus on the fact that, yeah, I can no longer squat, or I can no longer do some of the things that I used to be able to do, and realistically probably not going to be able to do those. But that's fine, because you shift your focus and you can choose to focus on the positives, or you can choose to focus on the negatives, what I can't do, instead of thinking about what I can do now. And that will largely dictate your happiness. Like, that simple switch, that simple change in the way you're thinking about things, that will be the biggest thing that dictates your happiness, not your success, not anything that's like objective or potentially anything that happens in your life. And I know that might sound strange, but there's a lot of research around this as well. It's more your outlook on life than it is what's actually happened. That was explained extremely badly and probably very uncompelling, but it has been observed that the difference between positive people and negative people isn't their life circumstances, but it's what they choose to focus on. Maybe that's a better way to put it. So as an example, you will all know someone who on paper maybe has a very similar life to you, yet they are insanely negative. Maybe even someone who has way more on paper than you do, but they're always so negative. Or you might know someone who has the odds stacked against them and has had a really tough life, but they are just a really positive person. And the difference is where they choose to focus their attention. Are they focusing on the glass being half full or the glass being half empty? And I think coming back to aging, I think women often fear aging more than men. And that's likely partly due to societal pressures of looks and maybe an element of, you know, we go through a hell of a lot more with hormonal changes as well. And we tend to admire an aging man like a silver fox. But women are usually admired for youth and for beauty over wisdom or experience. And that's just, I guess, a societal thing. But you can change that. And that's your internalized thought. You can change the thought that you can change your perception and your views of what's important and why people like us and what it is that we deem as success, because you can choose that for yourself. And ironically, you won't feel powerful when you spend all of your time worrying about how you look. And what's way more important is the impact that you have on others. And a good way to think about this is think about anyone who inspires you. I am willing to bet, especially knowing my listeners, that it's not just simply because they looked a certain way or they had really nice skin and hair and they didn't have any wrinkles. Do you know what's really inspiring about her? No wrinkles. Yeah, sound that hugely inspiring? No. And if you do think that, then you should potentially think about the depth that you, or what you mean by inspired. Anyway, the point is, it's usually something someone has done or the impact they've had that is inspiring. And that has nothing to do with age. In fact, it probably does have something to do with age. You probably have more time and wisdom and worldly experience to have bigger impact as you age. So there's a positive to aging. Anyway, coming back to the concept of having peaked, which I think is really interesting and something I definitely feel on a physical level, because I have certainly peaked on a physical level. And shout out to my herniated discs for playing a large part in that. But I think what is fortunate is that I really genuinely do care less about that now. And in a way, it's a bit of a reframe, but in a way I'm actually grateful, as the effort that I once put into exercise training can now be placed elsewhere. And you might think that this is pushing the reframe a little bit, but I see exercise truly very differently than I used to. That's not to say I don't do it anymore. I still exercise at least 5 times a week. But I now care more about how exercise makes me feel and how it contributes to my productivity and how I show up than previously when I was looking at how it made me look or exercise performance outcomes. And some people may feel that that benefit is less tangible. So the benefit of productivity or how you show up mentally. And thus, maybe it's harder for someone to stay motivated. But I actually think the complete opposite is true. I have immediate feedback. So instead of putting in a load of work and training all winter and hoping that I stay injury free and I run a PB in the summer, I feel the immediate benefits of exercise on my mood and productivity. And this massively helps with consistency. Because one of the hardest things that people struggle with when it comes to diet and exercise is this delayed reward. Whereas if you're getting that immediate feedback, like maybe an example is if you're, I don't know, lactose intolerant, like you get the immediate feedback from eating dairy that that was not a good idea. That's not a great example. Okay, a better example is this. I've had a few clients with Parkinson's disease, and they have been the most adherent clients I have ever worked with. And this is the reason why. They get an immediate feedback. They see the benefits immediately. Like a lot of them, if they did their morning exercise, would have improved, like a reduced tremor, better movement throughout the day, more fluid movement, clearer thoughts. Like that's a huge direct impact to your quality of life from doing some exercise. And that means that you don't skip days when you see the benefits. But sometimes, you know, if you don't have Parkinson's disease or you're not lactose intolerant, sometimes you have to listen a little bit more closely and maybe observe these things and go and look for them. So like on the days that I've exercised, how do I feel? Do I feel distinctly different? Do I work? Am I more productive at work? Do I show up in a better mood for my family? Those kind of things. That is immediate reward. Very, very important. And if you take one thing from this episode, I actually just paused it to write a little note on that. But if you take one thing, I think it should be that. Like, stop always looking for the delayed reward and start listening to the immediate reward, because you will feel it. You will feel it. Right, I want to talk a little bit about menopause and the fear of menopause. I think this is becoming a bigger and bigger problem. And on one side, I think it's incredible that more people are talking about their experiences. But I do also think it's contributing a lot to this kind of dread and fear. And a point I want to make about menopause is that the loudest voices are likely the people who have struggled the most. And that is inevitable, but I think it adds to this fear and anticipation and worry about something that is inevitable. And remember, worrying is like suffering twice. And I know that doesn't, you know, that doesn't just eradicate everything that you worry about, but it is a good reminder. And a lot of my clients worry about the menopause because of a lot of these horror stories. And there's no point causing yourself anxiety and stress by worrying about something that you don't have control over, because the experience that other people have had may never happen to you. And hopefully, you know, it doesn't if you're listening to a lot of horror stories. And you don't hear people shouting about how actually the menopause for them wasn't that bad. So you could quite easily think it must be awful for everyone. And I absolutely understand that. Like, one, there's never going to be a headline like, woman goes through menopause and doesn't experience an awful, like, loads of awful side effects. But equally, if you are someone who hasn't particularly struggled and you know that your friends and family potentially have, you're not going to be an absolute knob, are you? You're not going to be like, oh, that was really tough for you. Nah, well, it's fine for me. Like, you're only going to hear about these really awful horror stories. And there is more and more that can be done now, especially with hormone replacement therapy. And it never ceases to amaze me the amount of clients I ask about whether they've spoken to their doctor about HRT and they say no. Like, please, please speak to your GP. And I will say here, I know that not all GPs are created equally. There are some very bad GPs, but there are also some very good ones, and you really, really have to advocate for yourself here. If you don't feel like you're getting the right support, ask to be referred to someone else. Is there a specialist that I can see about my menopause problems? Go and do a little bit of extra research and just keep pushing for that referral. And I think that's true with many things. Like, you really have to push and advocate for yourself. It is ridiculous. Like, there should be specialists in every practice. And I've spoken to Dr. Mike about this, and I think he says there, you know, there is meant to be, or there usually is. But 50% of the population are going to go through this. Like, it needs to be supported. So anyway, if you are struggling, please go and speak to your GP. And if they're rubbish, please ask for a referral, and please advocate for yourself. Anyway, some of the side effects of menopause, in fact, almost all of the side effects of menopause are caused by this drop in estrogen. And if you take hormone replacement therapy, i.e. to replace that drop in estrogen, you will probably have a far smoother ride of it. Now, some people can't for numerous reasons. For example, if you've had certain forms of cancer. But for most people, or for, well, most biological women, HRT is a really great option. And there is often this reluctance to take hormones because it's quote unquote unnatural. And yeah, you're right. Like, it is technically not your own natural hormones, but that doesn't mean it's inherently bad. And actually, if you're going to take that frame of thought that, you know, unnatural equals bad, most things aren't natural anymore. Like, you could claim almost anything is unnatural. Modern medicine isn't natural, but it has certainly increased the length and quality of life of, I was going to put a number on it, but of us all, basically. So obviously it's up to you if you do or don't want to take HRT, and something to discuss with your GP. But if your logic is that it's not natural, I would suggest that's quite a flawed logic, and you should work through that a little bit. So aside from HRT, or hopefully actually as well as HRT, exercise is by far one of the most important things that you can do during menopause to reduce negative side effects like muscle loss and loss of bone mineral density. And the, I was going to say, what's the right, anyway, basically most women will store more body fat around their middle during the menopause because of this drop in estrogen. And that increases your risk of certain conditions, certain metabolic conditions like cardiovascular disease and type 2 diabetes. Again, exercise reduces this increased risk. And when it comes to exercise, the advice doesn't really change from your premenopausal state. just because you are menopausal, you don't need to do anything inherently differently. And it's just, it's more that it's just even more important. But, and I'm sure people listening to this, like, waiting for me to say this, or I hope they are, but it is also often a lot harder to do. A lot harder to stick to your diet, a lot harder to exercise. And this is due to these hormonal fluctuations. Like, if you can't imagine what the menopause is like, I've not been through the menopause, but I've spoken to a lot of people who have. And by the way, if you filled in the menopause questionnaire, thank you. And thank you for sharing your experience, and thank you for making me a better coach. But, and by the way, we'll do another podcast basically on some of the things that we have noticed in our research around menopause. Imagine PMS times 1,000 and the things that you struggle with during PMS. That's probably the same but heightened, or very similar but heightened. So things like low mood, things like cravings, things like being a little bit irrational or not logical, things like increased hunger, lack of sleep, which again links back to low mood, hunger, sometimes hot flushes, which contribute to potentially discomfort during exercise. So we may have to find some solutions there. Sometimes that's exercising at different times of day, or sometimes that's different forms of exercise. Sometimes that's shorter sessions, which, by the way, still have a huge benefit. You don't need to do a lot of exercise to benefit from exercise. I think that would be like my one mantra, if I had to give one. You don't need to do a lot of exercise to benefit from exercise. It's not very catchy, but hopefully people get the point. And the difference between my menopausal clients and my premenopausal clients is usually often that they sometimes just need a bit more support or solutions to whatever they're struggling with symptom-wise. And it's certainly not a one-size-fits-all. It's not, if you are going through the menopause, you need to do X, Y, and Z. Here's a cookie-cutter program. It's always working with the client. That's why it's client-led. Whatever you're struggling with, we find solutions. But what the one thing that I will say about exercise is it gives you some kind of control back. Rather than just sitting in fear of your body changing and feeling like it's like there's nothing you can do to control that, you now have something that you can focus on, that you can control. And remember, that's even harder, like these feelings of fear that your body's changing, is even harder to deal with when you're hormonal. But if you can make peace with or accept the things that you can't control, this gives you more time and energy for the things you can control, like exercise. And people put so much time and energy and anxiety into resisting the inevitable, and it takes up so much of their brain space and brain energy. Like, not accepting reality doesn't make it less real. And I think everyone fears this, and rightly so, by the way, this like loss of independence as we age. But by far the best thing you can do to take control over that and to stack your, is it stack your cards? I don't know. To, I'm running out of words now. To hedge your bets, to put yourself in the best position, right, to age well, is to stay active. And research shows that many of the changes that we attribute to aging are actually caused in a large part primarily by disuse. So one study that looked at this was called the Dallas Bed Rest Study, and it showed some pretty scary findings. So 3 weeks of bed rest resulted in increased heart rate, higher systolic blood pressures, a drop in the heart's maximum pumping capacity, a rise in body fat, and a fall in muscle strength. And that's just 3 weeks. So after 3 weeks, they put 20-year-olds on bed rest for 3 weeks. They had the typical health of 40-year-olds. So essentially they aged via inactivity 20 years in 3 weeks. That's pretty scary. But, and this is the positive side of it, after an 8-week training plan, the men who were on bed rest had regained all their markers and improved from baseline. And then they took this same group of men, they followed them up when these men were 50. And they found what they expected, you know, some age-related decline in health markers, things like increased body fat and reduced fitness measures. But, and this is what's quite shocking, their markers still weren't as bad as when they'd had 3 weeks bed rest at age 20. So that's, I mean, this should be quite encouraging. Basically, what I'm saying is if you stay active, you can reduce the impact of aging on your health. And not only does exercise reduce the markers that we use for aging in relation to health, but it also reduces your disease risk. So another study, the Harvard Alumni study, found that men who exercise regularly are 39% less likely to suffer heart attacks than men who do not exercise regularly. And decades of research now clearly shows that regular exercise prolongs life and reduces the burden of disease and disability as you age. And more importantly, I would say, improves your quality of life as well. You don't just want to live a long life, you want to live a high quality life where you have independence. And I know that I said that you can't stop aging, but if there is anything that comes even close, it's exercise and staying active. And it doesn't have to be, you know, a ridiculous training program. It can be as little as walking. It doesn't have to be hours in the gym. So this Harvard alumni study looked at the 40% or 39% reduction in heart attacks was off the back of, what was it? The maximum benefits were linked to an amount of exercise equivalent to walking about 45 minutes a day at 17 minutes per hour per mile. Basically, a brisk walk for 45 minutes per day. Like, you can do that. And apparently, on average, sedentary people who started brisk walking for 45 minutes a day added 1.6 years onto their life expectancy. And that's when they started over the age of 45. So it really is never too late to increase your health and life. To conclude this episode, stop telling yourself that you've had the best years of your life. Like, I loved being at uni, but was it hell the best years of my life? They are 100% still to come. Life just keeps getting better and better, and it's easy to look back with a bias and only remember the smiles and the photos you had and not remember the down days. And you have this sort of rose-tinted glasses effect. You were probably dealing with a load of shit then, just like you are now, and you were probably stressed then as well. And what's funny is, like, you look back and you're like, oh, that stress wasn't important though. What's happening now, that's what's stressful. And I think that happens at every stage of your life. So if you think about when you were at school and exams seemed really stressful and you're like, oh, I remember in primary school when we didn't have to do exams. But actually there was something that was probably stressing you at that point as well. Or when you're at uni and then you look back at school and you think, God, it was so easy just doing my GCSEs, and now that I'm at uni, like, everything's so much harder. And then you leave uni and you have, like, actual have to go to work, and you're like, oh God, now I have to actually pay bills and worry about stuff. Like, that's so much more stressful than just making sure I got an essay in at uni. Basically, your biases to how you feel now, and you'll likely move on to the next phase of your life, and then you'll look back and think that the previous phase was the easy phase as well. So stop looking back with rose-tinted glasses. I mean, do if you enjoy it, but don't let that take away from what is happening right in front of you and what is your incredible life at the moment. And I think my biggest fear is probably regret. And ironically, your biggest regret will be wasting time worrying about what's to come instead of enjoying where you are and embracing it. Okay, take homes. You're not too old. You're never too old to make change. And if you want some support, feel free to shoot me a message, esg@esgfitness.co.uk or at esgfitness on Instagram. And if you have enjoyed this episode, please do share, please do tag me. And I am wishing you a full day of presence and gratitude. And also, you can sign up to Commit to Six at esgfitness.co.uk/commit6. Goodbye!